You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Humanitarian Radio. My name is Tony St. Tone and my host is Janie Beauclair. Today's episode, we have an amazing photographer named Gene Kirkland. He has done some great work with Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith, Ronnie James Dio, Journey, The Who. He's going to tell his story today and what it took for him to get to this level. It's a really fascinating story. So what I'm going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break and get really right into it because he has so many great stories to talk about. So we'll be right back after this commercial.
Do you have a great idea for a product and you don't know how to get it made? Call Artistic Journey. They'll help you find your way to getting your new products made and into the marketplace. Need a free consultation? No problem. Need artwork and graphics? No problem. Need your idea turned into something wonderful that the whole world can use? Call Janie at Artistic Journey to help you get through this process. It's not as hard as you think. With 20 years of experience, Artistic Journey can pave the way for your product to get into the hands of people around the world. Call Artistic Journey today, 941-780-2538.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician St. Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sttone.com.
We can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes.
We choose to end.
For music with a positive message, check out sttone.com.
So we are back, and we're here with Mr. Gene Kirkland, photographer extraordinaire. How are you, darling?
How are you? How are you guys? I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing well. So we've told people about the photo session that we had with you as a band, and we've been talking about your very, very, very cool career. And so I wanted to really have you on the show because we're trying to give a brighter light to celebrity people that constantly get the bash on the front page of papers, but really don't get the human side told very often. And since you've been working with a variety of musicians and different people for the last many, many, many years, we thought it would be a great way to get perspective on how things really go for you when you're doing photo shoots. And how did you even get into that business in the first place?
Well, Janie, first off, I work with amazing people. I mean, I am not to drop any names.
Drop some
Justin
names.
Drop names. Go.
Drop some names.
Justin Bieber. Whatever that guy is, and all these people that are in the news, if they're just causing trouble and making news and all this stuff, I mean, it's like, I just think that I still work with the same people that I grew up listening to, and that I remember just being in school, high school, and just kind of daydreaming of, like, this is what I want to do, and how can I make this happen? So it went as far as just drawing. If anybody is as old as I am and had these things called pinkies, I used to just write on these little things on what I want to do and what bands I want to shoot on and write their logos on there and all that kind of stuff. And actually, slowly it started happening. I used to go to concerts when I was a kid. And I would develop the pictures and actually sell them as bootlegs. I would sell little pictures. I would go in the dark room because I had photography class. So I would just start in photography class and go to concerts and try to get the best seats and started my little, you know, selling of the bootlegs right there. And then it actually developed into a real career, a real, you know, thing, a passion that I had for it. I mean,
very entrepreneurial.
Well, it was just you know, I learned as much as I could in the technical part of it in high school and all this stuff, but really, as they say, you have to have some sort of inkling of a gift of it, and then have streetwise. I mean, there's streetwise, and then there's schooling-wise, and right. I'm more streetwise.
I want to go back for a quick second. You had said that you would write down, almost like a positive affirmation, you would write down who you wanted to interview and who you wanted to take pictures of early on pieces of paper. Is that something that you just did intuitively? Because, I mean, we talk about the laws of attraction on this program, and it sounds like you were already putting your focus on exactly what you wanted to do and then just brought it into fruition. You said, hey, this is something I'm very passionate about, and let me write it down. And as you wrote it down, you just brought it more, pulled it to yourself, and it seems like, obviously, this is where it came to. So you manifested exactly what you wanted to manifest.
Well, it actually happened. I was in, like I said, I was in high school, and it was the last. Let's see. Let me try to remember what high school was like. I was in the last 2 years, which would be junior and senior year, and I got on the yearbook staff of yearbook in my senior year, and at that time I was sneaking my cameras. My camera into concerts. Actually, I'm not sure if they allowed you to have them or not, because there were so many rules, as I found later on in life, what you had to do to get your pictures, to shoot those concerts. But I would just, you know, I would take a date to a show, and then I would take my camera apart and hide it in her big purse. I said, bring a big purse, bring a giant purse, and then when they get searched, then I just, they wouldn't be bothered with it. So then I would put my lens back on my camera and assemble everything, and then start, you know, taking pictures.
You're like James Bond.
Well, Gene Bond, whatever.
Gene,
you know,
Bond,
it could,
yeah,
be that way. Yes. So anyway, I was on the yearbook staff, and it's so funny. My first published anything of works was done. They dedicated 2 pages. To me and my yearbook, and my yearbook class, and my graduation yearbook has my photos, my live photos in there, and that was my first published public anything.
Who were you shooting back then? What were the name of the bands that you were shooting, or what were the name of the bands that actually made it into the yearbook?
Cheap Trick, Styx. I managed to get a Who picture. Gosh, look at them. I would go pick up my yearbook now, but then I'd start reading through it and start looking through the comments. But it was Cheap Trick, and there was Styx, and then there was, I think there's a Journey picture in there, and then there's, oh my gosh, they did a big picture of I think it's Pete Townsend in there. And then it's just stuff that they liked, that I was shooting that was good enough, that would make it. And it was, again, I didn't know what I was doing. I was trying to just, I didn't know about lighting. I didn't know about concerts. And, of course, when you're trying to sneak a picture, you're just like, I never got to enjoy a show because I was too busy
being a stealth photographer.
Were you, let me ask you this, 2 questions. One is, were you shooting in black and white?
Yes, Tony, I was doing black and white because I was able to develop it myself.
Right, because you're doing it in the dark room.
However, later on, when I found out that I didn't know what I was going to do with college, I didn't know if I wanted to college, I didn't know what anything about. So I found out that my high school photography teacher, his name is Mike Coppinger, who is completely my idol. He taught me a lot of things. He's my mentor and my idol, and just encouraged and told me, you know, he told it like it is. He said, look, this, you're not going to get anywhere with this. You got to put this in. And he gave me all the do's and don'ts and everything else. Well, I found out that when I graduated from high school, he went to a local college where I lived, and I enrolled into some of his, you know, classes and stuff, and actually not only was in some of his classes, but was asked to be employed there and work under his tutelage. So I was like his, like, assistant. So I got paid to go to school and learn more. So
that's great.
I remember going to a Ted Nugent concert and developing my own first role of color, and I'm going like, oh, just, I have no idea what this is going to turn out to be like. I have no clue of what color or if it's going to come out, but I'm just going to just pray and just go for it. And it came out, and it will be one of my pictures. That's one of my favorites, my early stuff, even though it's technically not the best. But to me, it means a lot, and it's still really cool and really good. And then I started, you know, developing pictures, not realizing that if I make one mistake, it's like, oh my goodness. And so I went and shot Aerosmiths, and I developed those myself, and I realized it's like, I'm pretty good at this, until one day I messed up, and I developed the photos wrong, and I'm going, you know what, I'm not going to do this again. And and
all it takes is one mistake.
The band was Thin Lizzy, and of course the singer had passed away, and there's no way of ever seeing them again. So it's like, I learned my lesson. I'll let professional labs do it. I won't do it.
So how do you, what do you remember as like the first transition into somebody hiring you to take pictures of somebody famous?
Well, because there's live photos, and then there's obviously studio photos, and it seems like obviously your early on experience had to do with a lot of live photos, where the artist doesn't, you know, they're just up there performing, and you're capturing that moment.
So how did it get into the point where it was a job?
Where it was, well, it sounds like he already had a job just from high school. Yeah, he was already working for the guy.
Well, now put me in the same place. I'm in the same college and the same era of you know, developing photos and still working at the college under my photo teacher from high school, and now he's moved to college, as I was telling you. And I was trying to get photography passes to shoot concerts, because that's where you gotta start somewhere, and I didn't have any portfolio. I didn't have anything to show anybody. I you know, people said, well, you know, I would look up, there was a book that you could get, and of course all the back of the records, you could try to find out who to call. I mean, I did my research of, you know, the record labels to call, who's the right person. Right. And so, long story short, was I would during my lunch breaks or breaks during when I wasn't working in the lab, I would ask the school newspaper, the college school newspaper, if I could cover, you know, a concert for them, or, you know, some sort of, you know, they had a little arts and entertainment section and all that stuff. And I remember going, oh, maybe I could just use a college. Who knows? I mean, we're not UCLA, we're not USC, we're just a small community college. So I called, and I, you know, after many calls of like, well, you know, what do you got to show us? Send us something. Okay, thanks, I don't have anything. But one guy, I remember his name to the day I die. His name is Dan Pine, and he worked for Polygram Mercury Records, who had on that label had Rush, Kiss, Rainbow, Outlaws, just various, all kinds of bands. So he said, "I'll give you a shot, and you know, maybe you can show me what you got and all this stuff." And so I had a photo pass to shoot the Outlaws. The Outlaws were opening up for a group called Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath at this point had a singer named Ronnie James Dio.
Right.
Because Ozzy Osbourne had left that period of Black Sabbath. So I went to the concert at Long Beach Arena here in California, and I went to shoot the show, and, you know, my first live show of everything. And at that time period, and from then on to this day, they only allow you 3 songs to shoot. Now, I don't know who made up that rule. I don't know why that rule was ever really started. I never really got it. And it still baffles me. But they allow you the first 3 songs to shoot, and then you have to leave. So I shot some pictures, and I got a few good ones and so on. And it was cool. And I showed the person, Dan, that they gave me the pass, and he said, "Okay, that's cool. You got to start. If there's anything I can do to help you, you know that I can. You know, I'll you know start with you and help you, whatever." And so I got another photo pass to shoot a band called the Scorpions, which was on the same label as the guy Dan had been involved with. And then I saw, as I was backstage, just kind of walking around, I saw the singer from Black Sabbath, Ronnie James Dio, and his wife's manager, Wendy Dio, walking backstage. And like a crazy lunatic fan, I ran up to him. I mean, bolted up to him and just started, to this day, I don't even know exactly what I said to him, but I just said, "I got some really cool pictures. Maybe you'd like to see them, blah, 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 blah." And I just rambled off some stuff, and he said, "Great, I'd love to see him sometime, and you know, we'll work it out." And I said, "Okay." And then I left. I just walked. I didn't even bother getting any information. I didn't. I just was like such a spaz. I just walked away, and I go, "Oh, I gotta find out how to reach him and do all this stuff." And they were gone. They had already left, and the concert started, and I shot my pictures, and I'm going, "Oh, man, that was probably the second dumbest thing I've ever did, not getting information."
Right.
So then I ran into a friend of mine who worked on the Black Sabbath tour, and we became friends. He did some sound. He did some monitor sound for the tour that I had shot, that one show at, and we became friends, and he said, "I got something for you," and he managed to slip me a phone number, and the phone number was supposed to be for Ronnie James Dio. And I said, "Yeah, right, I don't believe people when they say, oh, it's like asking to shoot, you know, call up Jimmy Page or call up, you know, George Harrison, or call up Paul McCartney. It's like, this isn't real." He goes, no, this is a phone number. Call him." And so I held on to that number until 1982 Thanksgiving Day.
really?
I drank a couple of beers, got enough nerve up, and I called that number, and he answered. He answered the phone, and I asked, "Is Ronnie James Dio there?" And he said, "This is Ronnie." And I let it fly. I have no idea what I told him. I don't know what I said to him, but he said, "Oh yeah, I remember you. I saw you at the Scorpion show, and we were there, and then you just left." And I said, "You remember?" And he said, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." So, and he said, "Listen, I don't want to be rude, but we're about to, have Thanksgiving and do our thing." And I said, "Oh, sure. He goes, "Here's a number. Call it next week and arrange a meeting with my wife's manager, Wendy, and, you know, we'll see what we can and it was the saddest, weakest little thing I ever had. And I took it over and I met, and they were kind beyond kind. I mean, they said, do you want to go into a recording studio and just maybe take some photos for us and, you know, see what you get? And I said, yeah. I mean, I'm still, like, not believing that any of this is possible. I mean, I'm, like, still just a few years out of high school. And, I mean, literally, this is 82, and I graduated in 80. So this is, like, this can't happen. This doesn't happen.
See, but you know what I find really interesting, Gene, is that you were extremely ambitious and a little naive, as you put, that you didn't even know what you were doing. But it was that, for me, what I get from this is it was your enthusiasm and your passion for what you wanted to do and finding a way to make it work. And that's the thing that I think most, I think there's a lot of kids these days that they just assume things are supposed to happen. I watch American Idol in these shows and you're like, the girl's 16, and she's like,
that's an evil word. Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, the girl's like, no. I'm 16, and I didn't know it was going to take this long. I'm like, take this long? You're 16, and right now you're on a national television show exposing your talent, where most people go a lifetime before they even get a chance like that. So you're someone who is looking at the back of a record saying, who's the manager? How do I get a hold of them? And this is before the internet, which I think is even harder, because then you had to write letters and
CDs.
Anything.
These are vinyl. These are real records.
Yeah.
These are like, there's no CDs. CDs didn't come out till another year and a half or 2 years later.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's the, what I find fascinating about your story is the passion and the enthusiasm that you had to just go for it and keep pushing. Let me ask you this. Did you have people around you that encouraged you to move forward, or did you have people discouraging you, go, Gene, you're crazy, dude. You're never going to get a shot of Ron James Dio, or you're never going to get invited to the studio. It's a pipe dream. Or were they people saying, you know what, you're pretty good, go for it? You know, I'm just curious of what fueled your fire, because I say on this show often,
I didn't tell anybody, because I don't tell people. I didn't tell people what I was going to do, because if it happened, then they'd want to be invited to come down and jump on the gravy train, as it were, or whatever. But
okay.
And then if it didn't happen, then it's like, you know, I don't know. I was on my own as far as, like, my parents, they were always supportive. They wanted to know. And to this day, my parents know. They read articles. I mean, they, you know, my mom and dad are friends with Lita Ford. They know Ozzy. They've gotten calls from Steven Tyler. I mean, they've become friends more than I have with some of these people. I mean,
that's awesome.
You know,
that's awesome.
I mean, they were right there, supportive of everything. I mean, I've taken them to shows. To say that my mom and dad saw Black Sabbath and you know, they went to see Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses on the last tour, and you know, with backstage, just, you know, hugging Slash and people, and just, you know, like, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, that's you know, how supportive they were. They were like, you know, I didn't really have a job except for the one in school, so, you know, film money was tight. So when you said about you said earlier, Tony, about the black and white color, I had to shoot whatever I had money for. If
right.
I had color, it was great. If I had black and white, which now, looking back, I wish I shot more black and white, because black and white has such a soulful look to it. It just
yes.
has such a really just a look about it that's just
it's classic.
Amazing.
It's classic. And the guys that you shot were obviously, they're still very well known today. They're classic artists. You weren't shooting fly-by-night artists. You were shooting legitimate artists and musicians that are still well known today, still currently touring today. And again, I think it's great that, so you had your parents who were your support group, and then everyone else you kept an arm length away to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to let you know this, because either you're going to discourage me from doing it, or you're going to go, yeah, let's go do it, and I'm going to come with you into the studio. So,
oh, yeah, take me with you. It's like, and then later on, of course, when it got to grow into like to be in a bar that smells like beer and piss. I mean, I'm sorry, that's just, they don't know what it's like to carry their own gear and do all the stuff. I mean, we live in a world that people think they're entitled, and you're not. You're not entitled. You may have talent, but you have to earn it, and you have to nurture it, and you're not entitled to anything.
Exactly. That's exactly my point is I have these conversations with younger musicians and I tell them what I've done, and they look at me and their heads just sort of twists a weird way. I mean, I tell a story where I was living in Connecticut, and there was an open mic that was happening every Tuesday in New York City. And I tell people that I would leave at 5 o'clock from New Haven train station, take a 2-hour train ride to New York City, get out of the train, get in a cab, just so I could sign up for the open mic at 8 o'clock, what time it started, so I had to get there early to sign up, play my one song, which was less than 3 minutes, and then get back on the train and
what
head home and be back by 12, you know?
What was your song?
Well, it didn't matter. I was doing it once a week. So it was an 8-hour journey to go up there and just play one song in New York City at this club, which was an open mic held by the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And people were like, why were you doing that? I said, because there was opportunity there. They're like, yeah, but you would spend like 8 hours to play a 3-minute song. I said, exactly. That's ambition. That's what makes things different from me and you. It's that kind of crazy drive.
Well, that's what kids don't get. They don't know what it's like to live in a van traveling with a group and having band members not change their clothes for 3 days. I mean, I could go on and on about, you know, like traveling in, I've traveled in Learjets, huge jets, big planes, small pickup trucks, vans, everything. And, from the lowest breaking down car, you know, with so and so to you know, everything in between. But it's like I have a brother, and he's got several kids, and I am afraid for them when they get older, because all they're going to be able to do is listen to what and watch DVDs of what I got to see, such as bands like Queen and AC/DC. Well, they're still around now, but everything has to stop. But I'm just afraid because of the fact that music is treated as just a commodity. It's just a business. And of course it is a business, but it's like, you know, I grew up just, I would sit with my headphones, I would get the newest Humble Pie record, or the newest Led Zeppelin record, or the newest Queen, or I listened to everything from Bob Seger. Music and photography were the passion that just meshed together. They were married together for me. I would put on my headphones, turn it up as loud as I could, turn it up without it distorting, and I would look at every picture on a record. If they had the pictures on the record, I would look. I would study who did what, who mixed the record, where did it record, where was they at, who was the guitar tech, I watched it and I listened to it.
Yeah, it's very different, because I think what happened back then is you were absorbed in the moment, and you were absorbed because you didn't have the video to go with it, so you would use your imagination and you had this big piece of cardboard, which was the album cover, that you would actually physically hold. It was a tangible thing, and that was your video that you would go, this is the album cover, and look, it opens up on the inside. So you had something to look at. As music progressed, they would start putting videos out. Now it's like, well, here's the visual that we want you to see for this song, and it's not your interpretation anymore. It's the director's interpretation or the band's interpretation, which is fine.
Well, by the time they did videos, I was actually, you know, working on videos, doing that. So by the time MTV and so on, because I think MTV, if I'm not mistaken, came out in 81, and just about to really start. So I was kind of getting reared up to get on my way to do stuff. But, like, you know, when I got the first Aerosmith, you know, live bootleg, anything anything that had photographs in it, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't seen these albums in a while because albums just, you know, I'm lucky I have the album collection, the nice chunk of albums I still have that I can look to. But I believe, like, Fleetwood Mac Rumors record, I saw that show. I didn't shoot it. I just shot it because I was, you know, didn't have a camera. See, I didn't own a camera until my parents bought me one because I was borrowing people's cameras to try to go to shows and shoot, and I wasn't able to, like, work it well. So it's like I had to get my own. I realized I had to have my own camera and my own stuff, and then I could do my own thing. And then, but anyway, I would buy a record that I liked, and I would just open it up, slap it on the turntable, and then sit on the couch or wherever I was at on the floor and just start looking and studying the photographs and the collages. And ironically, my first and favorite credit was when I was invited to come down to shoot Ronnie James Dio. He was on his own. He went solo after leaving Black Sabbath. You got to understand, things happen in such a fast pace of like a year or so. When I had met him, when I had shot photos of him on that show that guy had given me the photo pass, and when I had shot him with Black Sabbath, it was just a year later that not even a year and a half, he had left Black Sabbath and started his own band, the Dio Band. And that's when I was asked to go down to the recording studio and, you know, snap off some candids and go hang out and meet everybody, and I did. And when the record came out, I didn't even know that my name or my photos would appear on that. I didn't even know because I just went down there and I gave them photos and I said, here, if there's anything you like, you know, if you can use them, you can use them. Again, being naive, but also so eager to have my name on on something.
Right.
And it was that record, that one record that started it all, and I'll be forever, ever, ever grateful to them.
But see, the thing, it keeps going back to the same ambition that you had, and, you know, you didn't feel like there was an entitlement there going, well, I took these photos, so I need to get paid for them. You're like, dude, you're not a professional like these guys. You're just coming up, so you need to eat a little crow first. You need to give away some stuff for free, because if not, you're not that good. You need to be at a professional level. You allowed them to come and get to know you and know your work, and I think that's...
I don't even know if I got money or not, and you know what? I really didn't care, because I just wanted to be in there. I wanted to get my foot in the door. I wanted to do what I'm just trying to figure out the years. I just wanted to do what I sat in high school, failing one class, but studying, you know, records. I would bring records to school and read them there and just daydream, or I would just bring music books and stuff to just read the lyrics and just read stuff. And, you know, I mean, that's why someone said, you know, you really ought to get into the photography class because you seem to have a creativeness to it and you're not paying attention to anything else, so you should get into that. So that's what I did.
Exactly. You know, Janie had a quick question for you. Go ahead, Janie.
Well, where's Janie at?
You want to let you guys do your thing here, but I wanted to find out things like, you know, when you go on the road and you're touring with all these different, do you tour or do you fly in dates, or how does that work for you? And then do they let you spend any real time with them? Do you get a chance to get to know these different people that you're shooting, or are they more, you know, take our picture and move along? How do people treat you?
It's different now. There's a thing called budget, and most people don't have it anymore or claim that they have it or whatever. I used to travel by tour bus or by plane or by commercial plane or the band's playing. I mean, when I was with Guns N' Roses, when they were at their complete heights of the Illusion tour, which would have started, that was 2.5 years of being on the road with a band that had their own, you know, 747.
Right.
Not their own, but they rented it out, their own rental MGM Grand.
So you'd hang out with them and you'd travel with them for the whole tour.
Did you travel with them for those that entire span, or did you just jump in?
I got a little cuckoo at times, and I had to, like, come home once in a while, and it's like, out of the 2.5 years,
yeah,
I spent 2 years on the road. But I also was working with other bands, too, so I'd have to jump home, and I was juggling doing other bands.
That's crazy. I mean, I could just imagine being on tour with Guns N' Roses at the height of their career.
For years.
And Axl Rose, just, you know, knowing the stories. Let me ask you this. Are the stories true? That's all I need to know.
Well, some of us don't know the stories.
Yes,
so that's
no. It depends on what story you want to ask.
I mean, there's a lot of crazy stories about him and his mood swings and not wanting to go on stage for 3 hours and the crowd is freaking out.
Well,
I'm like, come on, get
on stage. I can't get in someone else's. I can't talk for someone else because I can't get in their head. I just know that. Yes, he did go on late. I have not spoken to Axl in several years, but, you know, I understand that, you know, he goes on time now, but before it was just, it was crazy. I mean, there would be times when, it, you know, a show wouldn't go on until midnight, and the opening band played at 9 o'clock. So
wow.
It's
right.
Like,
that's what I mean.
But it did happen, and it just, you know, you're either in for the long haul or you can go home.
Right.
So it's like, I'm in there. And
who was your favorite band that you traveled with in that time frame? And who would be your favorite band to photograph now, other than Saint Tone?
Actually,
Saint Tone was a fun Saturday afternoon, I must say. That was really a blast.
Yeah, we really enjoyed you too, I gotta say.
Asking a favorite is like asking,
who's your favorite child?
What is your favorite meal? What do you like to eat? It's like, what am I in the mood for? I mean, I've had great experiences with Guns N' Roses. I have had amazing experiences with Black Sabbath. I've had fun with Aerosmith. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I try to remember all the good stuff. There have been some really ugly, nasty situations of things that have happened and whatnot. But you know what? I put those away. I take the negative stuff and I just forget it. I try to not
save it.
To remember that because it's like it doesn't mean anything. It's the good stuff, the fun stuff, the stuff, because I've been interviewed several times on magazines and behind the music and stuff like that, and they want to know dirt. And you know what? I don't dish it out like dirt because I don't want to.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
It's not necessary.
Yeah.
I don't sling it, and I don't want it, and I don't want it to. You know, it's like I like to live the part where people go, "Oh, that was fun," and then I share the. You know, if I look at a photograph, I pick out something. And I can go right back. I can smell what that arena was like. I can tell what songs were being played. I can almost hear how loud it was. I mean, it's just, I go right back to that. So I don't really like to think about anything that's negative or
just
not,
totally
not
understand.
Worth it.
So tell me, I understand that you have been asked to put some photographs in a salon in Studio City. Top secret, and I understand that you're going to be picking some of the cream of the crop of your favorites and putting them amongst the studio there, and then they're going to do a bit of a fundraiser and celebrate your photos. Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, that actually actually, let's see, let's go back to a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine. His name was Rohan Ocean, and he wanted to come look at my photos of Motley Crue. He was really, really, he had seen something that I had, and said, "Is this yours?" And I said, "Yes." And he really wanted to look through my stuff. And I normally sell pictures. I just didn't do that. I just sold them to the record labels and to magazines and stuff. But to the public, I didn't. I just kind of, I don't know, something. Every photographer does it, by the way. Every photographer sells their pictures to galleries or whatnot. But my friend Rohan, now we're going back a couple years from now, so this would be about 2012.
Okay.
Came over and he picked out these pictures and he said, "You know, if you ever, I really want one of these." I said, "Okay. You know what? I'll get around. You know what? Sure, no problem."
I'm sure you get that from a lot of people.
And then a year later, which was last year, we were together, and he goes, "Let me see those pictures again, and let me see some of those." And it's like, sure, because they're in file cabinets, and sometimes it's like cleaning out a garage. Once you start, it takes forever. You start looking through stuff, and it's like your day is shot, and it's like, oh, I can remember everything. I remember, like, I look at a picture, I know exactly what had happened that day, and who was there, and what was said, and all this stuff. So, long story, he bought a picture for me, and I said, "Sure, okay, you know, go ahead, you know, just, you know, here you go." And he knew what he wanted, and that was it. I thought that was the end of that, and you know, so on and so forth. He started a gallery. He started his own production, his own gallery, and it's called Black Lightning Gallery.
Okay.
And Black Lightning Gallery is not just me. I just happen to be the first artist photographer, because it's going to grow and it's going to build to other people.
So he put a bunch of your shots in there in his gallery, and that's how this all got started with Secret?
Well, it's an online gallery right now. It's an online, because what we decided to do was let people who aren't in California or aren't close by that can just do this see what I have. And the whole idea was two very important things had to happen. It all became clear when I started looking through pictures, going, "I don't remember taking this," I don't remember seeing this for forever, or something I don't look at. So we decided that if I was going to offer up some of my prints, three things had to happen very important to me. It would have to be either some of my classic ones that are just people know, and they just go, they've liked them, and they've seen these pictures, and they really, they're called classics for a reason. They really like them.
Okay.
Two, which is very important too, is the fact that these are ones that have never, that I've never let out, that I've never let
anybody
see before.
That's exciting, just by itself, that these pictures haven't really been exposed at all.
No, I barely have looked at them. I would look at them and then put them away and then not pay attention to them. And then, you know, again, when you clean your garage, you go like, "Oh my gosh, my G.I. Joe doll, whatever." It's like, it's crazy.
Okay, and so what was your number three?
The other third part is that that I wanted to pick a series. We still haven't figured it out yet how many, but just a nice handful of charities that mean something to someone that either has anything from an addiction problem to saving, you know, or helping an animal, or to cancer, who's lost someone in cancer. picture.
And
it's
you and I had spoken about donating a picture to the GoFundMe thing that we're doing for a friend of ours, Mike Precise, who's losing his vision. And,
yes.
You know,
yes.
That's something that's ongoing for us, and we talk about it on the station a lot. So I want people to know that when the time comes that we choose a gene photo, you guys all need to really get behind it and hop online.
Absolutely.
And
I remember that very well because it was, you know, it's something because the thing of it is, there are so many, unfortunately, this world is great, but there's so many things that so many people don't have or they need help with, and we want to have proceeds from sales of a picture to go to, you know, this portion or this portion or this portion or, you know, it's like, obviously, I lost a very dear friend, Ronnie James Dio, to cancer. So he has a cancer fund, or I'm sorry, his manager, wife has a Stand Up and Shout, which is a cancer fund research, and so proceeds will go to that.
I think that's just beautiful that you can take something that has been your passion and your career for so many years and turn it into something that is so positive for people that you don't even know, and be able to constantly talk to people on our show about, look at what it is that you've done in your life and what you have the ability to do just with your own two hands to make a difference in someone else's life. And that's exactly what you're doing by putting up photos that, you know, got you through your life's career and now are helping other people change their lives completely.
Well, all I can say is God's given me a gift and so many opportunities of so many wonderful things. I mean, I would have to say the average person does not like to go to work. I can't wait to go to work. I can't wait to, you know.
That's how you know you've chosen the right career.
And so I have to give something back. So, you know, of course, people have to make a living, but of course, you have to give something back. I've gotten so many fun things out of all these people I've worked with that, you know what, what's these charities, and we try to figure out how to, we're just picking through and seeing which one, you know, cover,
yeah.
There's so many, and which one will cover, like, you know, everything. So we're with this gallery, it's an online gallery, and it's new, we're just starting it, but.
And is it up now, Gene? Is it actually up now where people can go and look at it now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Say the name of it again and the address of it.
It's blacklightninggallery.com.
Okay. And where can people get a hold of you if they want to follow and see what you're doing these days?
Well, if they want to follow me, they just have to drive to my house and just have to just watch me do what I do and just walk around the house with me. No.
Be careful what you ask for.
No, I know.
Got a million people listening.
I guess.
Do you have a Facebook?
Of course, yes. Gene Kirkland. Gene Kirkland, and I'm on Facebook, and it's just all these social media things. I'm still stuck in 1976 because I just, some of these things I just don't get. Constantly yelling at my wife. Not yelling, I'm going, what do I do? How does this happen? What did they change now?
By the time you figure out the new one, there'll be a new something out anyway. So, you know, if you skip 10 steps, don't sweat it because you're just going to have to learn something new that comes out next week anyhow.
Well, that was the biggest joke that people used to tell me on the road when it was with bands and stuff. I used to have brick phone.
Motorola.
You're like, what, $10 a minute or something?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, this is crazy. And then I'm not going to have one of these anymore. And then I waited. And the next day I knew, you were able to get them for free if you bought something. If you bought this, you get a free phone. It's like, all right, that's, I'm liking this.
I'm on board. So,
But the photography and music just have to say, very importantly to me, it's a passion that I still have. Unfortunately, music and photography is just given away. It's not treated with the respect that it used to have.
You're singing Tony's song here, brother.
I understand. I would give a photo to an artist or to a friend just to, you know, if and I'll be honest, completely blatantly honest, if it helped me get, a photo pass or something.
Right.
But there's so many people that think they're entitled. They're entitled to this. They're entitled to this. It's like, why haven't I mean, people used to sell records left and right, gold and platinum records. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to been given a few gifts, and they were platinum and gold records.
Very nice.
People sell records, I guess they go copper. They don't go platinum, they go copper.
Yeah.
It's like going to Vegas. There's just too much. There's just too much. You go to Vegas and you go, what am I going to see today? What show or what am I going to go do? And it's your sensory overload. And I think society is overloaded because, I mean, I watch the news and I see people lining up for a telephone, a freaking telephone. It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Gene, I really want to thank you for being part of our show today. We really appreciate you taking some time out and giving us an inside view on what it's like to be a photographer out there on the road. And just, you have an incredible amount of work, and I encourage everyone to check it out. And I just want to thank you again for sharing some insight on your world.
What your life has been like. Yeah, it's been very fascinating to hear this, Gene, because, we don't often get to hear from guys like you.
Well, I probably did more rambling and bitching than anything, but it's just more like to get me started on one thing and it's another thing. But all I can say is, you know what? If someone gives you a chance or someone gives you just an open door, be grateful. Don't be somebody that thinks they're entitled when they don't even know what they're doing. But
right.
Just be grateful.
Yeah.
Amen.
Absolutely. So everybody, that was Gene Kirkland, and we thank him so much for hanging out with us on the show today. And please do follow him. Check out his Facebook. Check out his photos. And Humanitarian Radio is also going to be keeping you updated on what's happening at the Studio City gig where his photos are going to go. So stay in touch and keep your eye on this guy. Thank you so much, Gene. Bye-bye.
Oh, Jane. Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much for having me on. And as soon as we know an exact date of things happening where you can physically go see and do things, we'll let you know.
Perfect. We'll talk to you again soon, Gene. Thank you so much.
Oh, God bless. Thank you very much.
Bless you too, honey. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's our show for this week. I want to thank Gene. And as always, I'd like to dedicate a song to our guest. This week, the song is Famous by Saint Tone. Peace.
Right time, wrong place, no new connection, wiped out, no sleep, this frustration, never want to say you were great, you finally make it, but now it's no crowd, so you have to fake it. na na na, yeah. Na na na, na 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 na, yeah. Na na na, na 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 na, yeah. Na na na, na 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 na.
So that was Famous by Saint Tone. You could find that song at www.sainttone.com. I want to thank our guest one more time, Gene Kirkland, for coming on and telling us all about photography in the rock world and what it's been like for him and how he has climbed that ladder to success. Be sure to support him and check out some of his great pieces of photography. They're really amazing. Until next time, have a blessed week. Take care.
Humanitarian Radio. Shouting out some good news for your soul.